Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Kim Jones from NFL Network in the previous half hour and Ryan Snyder from Rivals.com and Blue White Illustrated in the opening half hour. Emily Kaplan coming up in just a few moments from Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback. Final half hour, the press conference of James Franklin today on recruiting. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day, my main man, I want to tell you right now, he's not only a great announcer and a legend, but one of the funniest and nicest individuals I've ever met in my life. My friend Johnny Holiday with Mello Trimble.
Trimble just inside midcourt with a dribble. Bender with a high screen. 37 seconds to go. Trimble will drive in. Throw it up with the right hand. Got it! Mello, a big three moments ago. Hits that one. He's got 11. And the Terps are up by four.
Oh, is he good? Johnny's good. And he's got a good team to broadcast, too. They're going to be in the Jordan Center, Maryland will, in 6 days. They're going to be there on February 7th. So just keep that in mind if you want to see them. And that should be a very interesting matchup in 7 days. First things first, tonight, Indiana at 6:30 on, beginning at 6. By the way, James Blackman will not play tonight for Indiana. Expect Devontae Green, the freshman, to start in his place. Very pleased. She's a Penn State graduate. She did great work for the Daily Collegian and then was able to hook in with Sports Illustrated and be one of the correspondents with Monday Morning Quarterback. It is great to hear on the line Emily Kaplan from Sports Illustrated. Hi, Emily.
Nice to hear that familiar voice. Thanks for having us.
I want to get into something. Peter King was on with us last week, and he specifically brought out something about your story with Aaron Andrews. How long did it take to cultivate a trust where someone would talk so personally about two issues that would be very difficult for anyone personally to talk about?
I can give you an easy answer. Exactly a year. I met her last year at the NFC Championship game with Panthers versus Cardinals. That was the first time I ever met her. And we stayed in touch after that. I, you know, met her in L.A. in May or June. So we kind of pitched the idea of the story, and then I just stayed in contact with her ever since then, to the point where even a couple weeks before we met up, most recently, she was vetting me with NFL players. She said that she asked Josh Norman, can I trust Emily? And Josh Norman said some crazy things, and apparently he said yes.
Well, if Josh Norman endorses you, you're in good shape.
I don't know if that endorsement carries weight anywhere else, but I'll take it.
You'll take it, exactly. It's one thing to know about the trial, because the trial was so public. How stunned were you when she talked about the cancer diagnosis?
Really stunned. What happened was, you know, we kind of finally agreed that we were going to do the story, and she said, meet me up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I'm in Chicago, so it's like a 2.5-hour drive. And she said, very critically, like, there's been a lot of developments, and I kind of figured that her developments meant something in the civil trial, and when we sat down, she kind of just laid it right out there. I had cancer this year, so I was probably as shocked as anyone who read the story.
Someone goes through a life and they see someone on TV, so they assume their life is incredible. Give me an idea in reading her and hearing her words, the pain that she has gone through with both stories. I'll start with the stalking story first and then the cancer story.
Yeah, I mean, especially just with the stalking story, you saw the way it was brought out at the trial where the Marriott attorneys literally tried saying, well, you know, this is actually good for her career. It helped her. And, you know, some maybe a reasonable person might hear that and say, that's crazy. But imagine if they were saying that about you. And that's something that she lives with. I mean, those kind of words sting with her. And every time she's around a big group of people, she's on the sidelines. She can be in her comfort zone, but she sometimes has these flashes where, you know, she thinks about this gross violation of her privacy or what people people are framing, you know, their perception of her. And that's, I mean, that's an incredible weight to live with every day.
Well, it's interesting because on that, what's interesting, not so interesting about it, is that one of the nights was in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And it was in the hotel. It was a Penn State-Ohio State basketball game. And literally,
I didn't realize that.
I think it was Brent Musburger, Steve Lavin, and her. And there was a group of maybe 10 of us, and she was part of the group, just talking in the lobby that night. And everything was, obviously, for everybody was fine. And, you know, life's good and the whole thing. And then you find out how horrific this ends up being for someone that's in the public eye. How much do you think it's changed her at all?
I think it's changed her so much. I mean, the anecdote I led with in the story was her just riding on a plane and feeling like she couldn't trust the guy sitting next to her because he kept staring at her. And she's wondering why he's staring at her and gawking at her. And at first she says, oh, this man must have seen me naked. And then she realizes he's kind of, you know, joking about her with a friend and saying, haha, I can't believe she can be on a public plane. So if that happens, just, you know, in that one story she shared with me, I just can only imagine how many times a month, a week, a day that she kind of has these thoughts.
All right, something else that you've written about, and this I think is going to be interesting as well, the possibility of an NFL D-League in Southern California. Minor leagues have been tried before in pro football, the Atlantic Coast Football League back in the late 60s, early 70s, and so forth, the European League. When you've talked to a couple of people dealing with this, how does the NFL feel about the developmental part, and how do those who want to put money into it feel about this?
Yeah, well, there's so many layers here, and one thing I would want to stress is this doesn't actually seem like it's competing with the NFL, which some of these leagues that tried to pop up did. It's actually more competing with college football and junior colleges. So they have a bunch of money from all these venture angel investors. They're not kind of at liberty to disclose how much or what, but the fact that they have this money, I think, is significant. I think there's a huge cost to, you know, a league like this, whether it's paying the players, it's probably even one of the more minimal costs. It's insurance and things like that. So it sounds like they've learned from a lot of lessons from some of these failed leagues, but it's really going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And, you know, one of the things they're promising is not only are we going to be able to pay players, you know, something they can't do in college, but we'll teach them more pro-style offenses. And when you listen to the NFL coaches, some of them kind of gripe about how there's this growing divide between college football and NFL, the style of play. So that would address that.
And that goes to the quarterback issue right away. I mean, a lot of people are trying to learn about who Mitch Trubisky is because stylistically he plays their game. Obviously, I do a lot of college games. I mean, I do college games every week. There aren't many pro quarterbacks I see out there throwing the football. So when you went down to the Senior Bowl, what kind of read did you get on the quarterbacks that were there and what the NFL people were looking for stylistically?
Yeah, man, it's a pretty bad class.
Yes.
Something I found interesting, and this is a kid who's not there, but Deshaun Watson. And everyone, you know, who watches any kind of college football or just even watch that Alabama game goes, this kid is a stud. Look at what he can do. But the NFL folks who are evaluating say, well, you know, you can't make those kind of runs in the NFL. And some of the things he was doing in college just won't translate. So I think those type of things are so interesting. Down at the Senior Bowl, you know, it's a senior quarterback class. The two guys that were standing out there were Pitt's Nate Peterman, who I know Penn State fans got to see a little bit, and Davis Webb from Cal. And those aren't exactly exciting picks.
No, exactly right. That's when JT Barrett made his announcement, I'm going back to Ohio State. And I was not being cryptic about it. I said, I don't know what his options were. Because he's not.
I'm right with you. Yeah.
I mean, because he's not a pro quarterback.
He's a tremendous college player, but sometimes it just doesn't translate.
Right. You can be a really good college player. And look, Braxton Miller, he's playing now an athlete position for Bill O'Brien down with the Houston Texans. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's what makes this D-League proposal interesting, because they're trying to find talent that translates. I mean, would that be fair? And how much would the NFL, for example, would the NFL consider putting a little bit of money into it if it is a development league?
Yeah, if it kind of grows into that. But right now, I think where they're starting is just pretty small. I mean, they're even just limiting it to Southern California, which I think also is trying to limit, you know, travel costs. And it seems to me that right now they're just targeting guys who maybe college football isn't for them, or maybe might academically have gone to a junior college. So they're starting small, but you're right. If it does grow and it does become successful, this could be something the NFL would be considered, or, you know, consider partnering with.
What's your assignment Super Bowl week?
I'm not going to the Super Bowl this year for the first time in a couple years, which is fine because it's a lot of the last couple years I've gone, I feel like I can never get anything good or interesting. It's just such a high volume of media. So I actually chose the Senior Bowl over the Super Bowl. I might be the only person in the world who could say that.
Did you stay for the game? Because they say rookies stay for the game.
Yeah. You know, I initially was going to stay, and then I bailed, and I left on Friday. It's so crazy.
See,
how everyone is there all week.
That's a veteran move, Emily.
Thank you. Okay. See, I can do some things well.
Oh, you do a lot of things well. I believe you were able to get a little time. You got back to see the Ohio State game here?
I did. Yeah, I was not actually on campus for it, but I celebrated that win, especially because my colleague Albert Breer is a very obnoxious Ohio State fan.
Did you get to a game at all? Rutgers?
No, I didn't. No, it's awful. I got to go.
Oh, you got to get back for a game. You have to get back for watching.
Next year, goals.
Watching from afar, what have you thought about them getting back to this point?
Man, so this is like the first year I really embraced being a fan of Penn State. And so there's this awesome Penn State bar in Chicago. It's called Durkin's. And it was so much fun to go. And like, it's just crazy because I feel like watching these guys, it's just finally the last wave of guys that I remember when I was a student and how much they've been through. And just hearing them talked about in this national conversation is like one of the top five teams in the country next year. I mean, it's just absurd.
It's amazing. Emily, it was great to have you on the show. It's great to hear you again. You do great work. I enjoy reading it. And obviously your background came from Penn State, and everyone is proud of what you've done.
Well, I appreciate that. And take care. I'll talk soon.
Emily Kaplan from Monday Morning Quarterback, Sports Illustrated. We'll come back. James Franklin's press conference on National Letter of Intent Day coming up in the final half hour. We're here in Bloomington, Indiana. Okay, that speaks for itself. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right. One quick note on recruiting. And, you know, he verbaled this afternoon, but he finally did send in his national letter of intent, and it was received at 4:05 this afternoon. That's Tariq Castro Fields from Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Another defensive back for Penn State. That's 21 in this class. And, in fact, I can actually talk about it now because he actually has signed it. They've actually announced it, put it out there, and so he is now officially on the list. And this is it's a big day for Penn State in a lot of ways. You're coming off, obviously, a great season. Two-thirds of these players committed to Penn State before they made the incredible run. They saw the vision of the program. They talked to the players. They saw the culture. They wanted in. And then things fell into place with the season. And to help them to close really well, they got a linebacker at the end they needed. They got defensive backs at the end that they need. They got four early entries that are intriguing, that are already on campus going, you know, and going through the winter program. And this is, it's a big day because they now have positional balance with this team. They now have class balance with this program. A lot of things that they've worked very hard to put into place, they've been able to do it. This is their fourth signing day. They've finished their third season, but essentially they've done all of this in 37 months. Actually, 36 and a half months they've done this. In 36 and a half months. And it's a wide-ranging group that they have here. I mean, look at where the guys are from on this, you know, on this team. We'll just go through with the recruits. Greensboro, North Carolina, Pontiac, Michigan, Stowe, Ohio, Glenshaw, Pennsylvania, Cincinnati, Clareton, Meadville, Spotsylvania, Virginia, Detroit, Ottawa, Ontario, Burlington, New Jersey, Arlington, Texas, okay, College Park, Georgia, Sparta, New Jersey, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Paterson, New Jersey, Harrisburg, West Norton, Pennsylvania, Bowie, Maryland, Mechanicsville, Virginia, Upper Marlboro, Maryland. I mean, that is a wide range to put this class together because they're looking to find people that are fitting how they want to play this program and the style they want to play moving forward. And it also gave them, positionally, they really did about everything they wanted to. I think the only position that's not really here is tight end, but they already have tight ends in the program that are young tight end. Danny Dalton, Nick Bowers is coming back. And next year happens to be a rather deep tight end group nationally to recruit from. So that's why you do look ahead to that. So that's what they've been able to do recruiting-wise. They've injected a lot of speed into the program. They've injected the right attitude into the program, the right culture into the program. They want people that are committed to community service. They want people who are committed to academics. And obviously they want people that are committed to winning football. And this is another big step for them. But again, look at the Big Three in the Big Ten East. Well, the Big Three had a big week. In the rivals rankings, all of them ended up in the top 10. Is that any surprise? That's just the way it is. The way it's going to be for a long time in this league. It's just the way it's going to be that you're going to have those three, and then Michigan State. It's based on what Ryan said, they did a good job today getting four-star guys to commit today, which was big for them because obviously they've been a major player in the Big Ten East. But that's the way it's going to be. That's why when I was talking about with some of the Illinois people, I said, you're in a good spot for this reason. You're in the West. You can move up quicker in the West than you can in the East. And that's a fact. That's why you take P.J. Fleck going to Minnesota. Their odds of moving up there. That's why what James Franklin and his staff have done, what they've done is remarkable because they've had to make this move in the Big Ten East. And that takes a lot. That takes a lot to make a move like that in the Big Ten East. And they've done it. So the next thing is the Blue-White game, April 22nd. It's something he's talked to me about, and he mentioned it today in his press conference. But I'll bring it up again. He would love, as an impact, to see Beaver Stadium sold out for the Blue-White game. That would be quite a scene to see that. They sell out for the spring game. He would love to see that happen. Now it's time to get to the build-up of that. Star-wise on the rivals thing, and you know I don't usually deal with the star thing, but I'll just as a point of fact, 1 5-star, 10 4-stars, 10 3-stars, 21. Or as Dick Girardi would say, blackjack. Jimmy Cephalo on the show tomorrow, play-by-play voice Miami Dolphins. Neil Coulong will be joining us as well to talk about the NFL. And also tomorrow we will have Matt Leon from Philadelphia. Mike Conti joining us Friday, Falcons Radio Network from Houston. And the sage of all sages, the seer of all seers, the mystic from the East, will join us in the final half hour Friday. Basketball tonight, Penn State, Indiana, Assembly Hall here in Bloomington, 6:30 the start on at 6, and James Franklin's press conference in the final half hour of the show today. So we start with recruiting, we end with recruiting. And it's just another way with the guest list of delaying for another day the Sean in the Suit show. I think Sean quit.
No, we're good. We're good.
Just remember, one digital media sale, we're up 100%. What?
No, it's true. That's a fact. Your math checks.
I'm trying to be positive. Our thanks to Kim Jones, NFL Network, Emily Kaplan, Sports Illustrated, and Monday Morning Quarterback, and Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com, and Blue White Illustrated. Jimmy Cephalo tomorrow, Neil Coulon tomorrow, Matt Leon tomorrow. James Franklin's press conference in just a few moments. Don't forget Mark Lawrence tomorrow. They'll have an argument, a tiff, a disagreement, a debate. Told you that thesaurus would pay off, my man. It has. James Franklin's press conference next half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And of course, we're always brought to you by Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia. On the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Steve Jones, Dick Durardi tonight on the Penn State Sports Network. They will have the Nittany Lions and Indiana from Assembly Hall. 6 o'clock airtime and tip at 6:30. Earlier today at Penn State and, of course, across the country, colleges getting the high school kids to sign on the dotted line, of course, known as National Letter of Intent Day. A couple of hours ago, James Franklin was in the media room at Beaver Stadium holding his press conference. So let's give you a portion of that now. National Signing Day today at Penn State. Here's Coach Franklin.
Today's a day to celebrate all the hard work that the coaches and the families have put in and the players have put in. That's a special day for these young people. Made probably the most important decision of their life up to this point. But like I told them this morning, they think they've worked hard up to this point. You know, the real work starts tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. I want them to enjoy tonight and kind of savor it. We'll do the same thing as a coaching staff. We have a lot of stuff going on today, obviously. Tonight, we're going to be going to my house. So anybody that lives in Port Matilda, I apologize. We're going to get after it pretty good tonight. Give the coaches off a long weekend, and then we'll have a staff meeting Monday morning at 7 a.m., and it's back at it. The coaches haven't had a day off since July. So this will be a well-deserved break. Just really proud. I think the thing that probably jumped out to me is, we've been recruiting most of these guys, for a long time, anywhere from, 2 to 3 years with most of these guys. And this morning, Skyping with them all, just impressive, to be honest with you. How articulate these guys were, how appreciative they were, the type of high school programs they come from, the parents. Just it was really nice. I was glad there was some other people in there to see it and for them to kind of get to know these young men and their families a little bit better like we do, because they're special people. And the type of football players is important, obviously. That's where it starts. But, you know, the type of students they are, the type of people they are, the type of communities they come from, the families they come from, and then ultimately the fit. And we got a great locker room right now. Our chemistry and our culture is really good. And, you know, we want to bring people that are going to come in and they're going to complement that and they're going to build on that. And, you know, we feel really good about that. So I want to thank the coaches. I want to thank the administration. I want to thank Andy Frank and our recruiting department. You know, this takes a lot. You know, as we all know, we don't really have an international airport here. It's not always the easiest place to get in and out of. Planes, trains, automobiles, and camels, whatever it takes. And Andy Frank and his staff do a great job of organizing all those things so we can get in touch and come in contact with as many recruits and high school coaches and families as we possibly can so we can bring in a group of young people in here that are going to continue to allow us to build in the direction we're going. So I want to thank everybody. To be honest with you, I want to thank, you know, everybody in the community because it goes a long ways. You know, I want to thank the people that work on this campus because it's amazing to me how many people talk to me about how beautiful the campus is, how clean the campus is. That's OPP. That's all the people that work on campus, cleaning things up, shoveling sidewalks, picking up trash. That's the president, you know, reinforcing that football is important, but academics are number one. That's our athletic director, Sandy Barber. That's the people in the restaurants that work in the restaurants and the hotels and the stores and people walking down the street. You know, this is a true college town. It's a true community. And, you know, for the kid that's looking for that and for the family that's looking for that, you know, we're hard to argue with. You know, you talk about, you know, one of the best educations in the world. U.S. News and World Report rankings back it up. You talk about great tradition and history when it comes to athletics, you know, not just football, but athletics in general. You talk about a caring and supportive community. We're going to check a lot of boxes for people. And then obviously the Big Ten Championship doesn't help. This is the first time since the game that I have not had the ball in my possession. I've taken it into every high school. I sleep with it. My wife rolled over the other night and almost broke her elbow on it. You know, and that obviously helps. That success on the field helps as well because, you know, the type of kids that we're recruiting, they want it all. And Penn State's one of the few places in the country that can really offer that. So I want to thank the administration. I want to thank the lettermen who've been unbelievably supportive. I want to thank the alumni. I want to thank all the Penn State fans. And again, I want to thank this community. And I want to thank our students. Our student section is the best in the country. Our fan support is unbelievable. That's why we were undefeated at home. And those things have a real impact. And before I open it up to questions, the one thing I do want to say is, you know, we got to keep headed in this direction. And right now, things are going really well. And I think a big statement that would be made is for us to sell out the spring game. 107,000 people would make a tremendous statement across this country about Penn State football and where we're headed. I want to thank all the people that are buying season tickets. I think we sold over 400 season tickets today. So there's a lot of really good things going on. And for us to get where we want to go, it's going to take everybody. You know, it's not the head coach. It's the players. It's the coaching staff. It's the administration. It's the fans. It's the alumni. It's the lettermen. It's everybody. It's all the other coaches in the athletic department. It's everybody. It's everybody pulling the rope in the same direction, and we're in a really good place right now. So we got to keep building on it. So, the one stat I will throw out to you that, you know, I'm pretty proud of, is if you look at the three previous years, you know, before we got here, I think the average class ranking was 40, almost 41. And then the last 3 years, that one year where we got the job, that was kind of a combination year. If you take that out and go to three previous years and then these past 3 years, it's 16. So you're talking average class rank of almost 41 and average class rank of 16. We still got a lot of work to do. We've made really good progress. I don't know if there's There's too many other programs in the country that can say that. That year, you know, that I talk about in the middle, obviously we got the job January 11th, I think it was. So that was kind of a blend of two staffs. But, you know, we got great players here, and we got great kids, and we're able to build on that. And I want to thank the players in our program because they've been unbelievable, not only academically but also football-wise, but really recruiting. You know, these guys come up on visits, and our players sell the program. They sell all the wonderful things and the type of experience that they're having here and how special it is. So, you know, we're heading the right direction, and I'm really, really excited, but we still got a lot of work to do, and it's going to take everybody to get where we want to go. So I open up the questions.
Raise your hand. We'll get a mic to you here in the room.
Hey, James, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You talked about being involved with a bunch of these kids for multiple years, but Ellis Brooks was a unique situation. Can you take us through the logistics and how you were able to get all of that done so quickly?
Yeah, you know, it probably wasn't as quick as people think. You know, we'd been, you know, in steady contact with Ellis, you know, for a long time. He was very active in hitting me up on Twitter, direct message. I did the same thing with him, Coach Pry. A lot of people say, well, you know, how come you just didn't, you know, keep offering guys? And we don't normally do that. We don't offer a lot of players. And then once we get commitments and people tell us they're coming, you know, why are you going to keep offering other players if you can't take their commitment? You know, and maybe we're a little old school like that, but you know, that's what we're comfortable in doing. That's how we would want to be treated as parents. That's how we would want to be treated as prospects. And you know, the guys that choose not to come here, we wish them nothing but success. But the guys that we do have coming here, you know, we're really, really excited about. And, you know, fortunately with Ellis, we were able to get in there and get in his home. And really, really sharp kid, really sharp family. You know, what I would characterize as a Penn State kid and a Penn State family. Obviously, it helps that, you know, this was a school he was always fond of. It was a really cool picture, I think, that they put out where you see him, you know, at Michael Robinson's knee, at Michael Robinson's graduation from here, him and his dad. And there's Ellis, you know, down by his knee as a little kid looking up at this place. You know, so I think those things help. You know, we felt like if we got him on campus that we would be able to, you know, make up some ground in a short period of time. But, I mean, literally he had all kinds of people coming into his house. You know, he had visited all over the country from the West Coast to the Deep South and everywhere in between. Had a lot of opportunities. You know, when they came on the visit, Dad was awesome. We felt really good about Dad. Mom, I was scared of. Mom got after me in the home visit pretty good. I survived it. We got her here on campus. And then Dad went downtown to the bookstore and bought $300 worth of gear. Pretty good sign. You know, pretty good sign. You know, he just has got really good parents. He's got a really good family. Mom, as most moms do, she loves her baby. She wants to make sure he's protected and in the right place. And we were able to get a really good player and a really good person from a really good family and a really good high school coach to jump on board with us. And, you know, the big man upstairs works in mysterious ways, and things happen for a reason. And, you know, I really hope it works out really, really well for both parties. Most importantly, you know, the party that's coming here.
James, kind of following up on that, could you talk a little bit about the importance of the last three guys you got to kind of finish out this class? You know, why it was important to get them on board and what they bring to the table?
Yeah, I think, you know, really, you know, keep recruiting. I think, you know, our staff was a lot like our season. We persevered, just kept battling. I know fans and people think the recruiting process should go smooth and perfect, but I've been doing this 23 years. It never does. And you just keep recruiting, and you stay positive, and you keep selling all the wonderful things we have here at Penn State. And, even with some of the guys that you think were solid the whole time. There was ups and downs and twists and turns. That's just kind of how it is. And I think our staff just stayed positive and persevered and kept pounding positive messages with guys. And, you know, we were fortunate. We were fortunate to close. I do think, you know, Ellis was a great one to sign with, to sign with us late in the process at a position of need. Obviously, Jason Cabinda is going to be a tremendous mentor to him. There's one that we can't speak on yet. And then, Corey Bowles, you talk about a huge pickup. You know, we have need at defensive tackle. We lost some guys to the transfer process. And, Corey Bowles is a guy that we recruited really early on. And once his mom and him got on campus, it changed completely. And, then we got some commitments, and, Corey stayed patient, and we just kept talking, and I really got to know him really well from a great high school. Coach Ronnie did a really good job, and Coach Spencer, we're jacked about having that guy. You know, you talk about a big, physical, strong, athletic guy that's going to have a chance to come in and compete, and we're really excited. So, yeah, I mean, Sean Clifford's a guy who's the first commitment of the class, and that one's a big one, and the last one's a big one, and everything in between. I do want to thank Sean Clifford and Etor Matos and a lot of those guys, that jumped on board with us really early in the process. And, they saw something in us very clear that maybe others didn't. And, it's really cool that we were able to reinforce that they made a great decision with how we played. But, I read a bunch of interviews with Sean talking about that, he wasn't surprised one bit. He saw this coming the whole time, and his family was really, really good. And, you talk about him having a storybook year as well, a bunch of injuries on his high school team. They end up going 5-5. He misses a bunch of playing time. He comes back and takes him to the state championship in Ohio. Guy's a winner, man. No different than we got this guy playing for us right now that took his team to 4 straight state championships. That guy's a winner, Tommy Stevens, Jake Zembeck, so we're starting to get winners and stockpiled at that position and every position. That's one of the things we didn't have when we got here was depth and competition at every position. And that's gonna make for an exciting spring. That's gonna make for an exciting fall. And I'm really looking forward to it. That experience that we got this year and then just creating the most competitive environment in the country at practice every day.
Coach, right here in the middle. You actually kind of answered this one with the answer before, but with some of those early commits, how important were they in terms of, establishing leadership, kind of getting, the later commits on board, how important were they, and who were some of the specific players that emerged as leaders early on in that cycle? I know you said like Clifford, Matos, and what have you seen from them as as a coach? Do you see those leadership qualities? And
I think obviously the guys that jumped on board were really good. They had a group chat going, so they all became really good friends. That recruiting weekend we had a couple weekends ago, again, it's not a recruiting weekend, it's a celebration. They come, they're all buddies, they're all friends, they just enjoy themselves. And their parents know each other, the players know each other, the coaches and our families. And it's just kind of a weekend to celebrate and answer any last questions they may have and go through everything for the third or fourth time in detail. But it's special. And those guys that jumped on board, they were very active. It's one thing for it to come from an area recruiting coach. It's another thing for it to come from a position coach or the head coach. But it's a complete different thing when these guys are out recruiting each other. And to be honest with you, it's not just telling guys to come here. It's also telling us, hey, coach, I don't know if this is a guy I necessarily want to play with. Our players telling us, our current players telling us that, or recruits telling us that coach, he's not a great fit for us. He doesn't fit the culture. So it's both. And, those guys were significant. They always will be.
Coach, you've obviously assembled a pretty strong class here, but is there any area of your depth chart that you might have liked to fortify a little more that you weren't able to with this group?
I think we're at a little bit of a different point now. You know, when I first got here at 65 and 75 scholarships, that was a major issue. We're in a little bit different situation now. I still think we're going to be recruiting guys to come in and play as freshmen. But in the past, we had guys coming in and they walked in and they were in the two deep. Where now, you know, it's going to be iron sharpens iron. It's going to be walk on campus and you know, compete like crazy. And you know, we're going to play freshmen. That's something that we're committed to doing. We're going to play the best players, you know, whether they're freshmen or seniors or returning starters or not. We're going to play the best guys. And, you know, needs, we're just at a different place. You know, I think, you know, we're going to go back and kind of look through some things, and we've already kind of identified some of those at this point. But it's not like we have glaring holes now like we did before. So, I think we've done a really good job solving problems. I think, you know, getting Corey Bowles late in the process was important because, you know, we had a couple defensive tackles transfer out, and we got a little bit of a hole, in one of the classes. I would prefer at every position to sign at least one player every single year so you don't have gaps in development in your program. That never really happens. You try to the best you possibly can, but that's going to happen from time to time.
Two Western PA guys I'm curious about, C.J. Thorpe and Journey Brown. C.J., you had to fight a little bit to the end, not quite to the whole way to the end, but he was looking elsewhere. And then Journey Brown's a guy that you offered and added. Where do you see Thorpe fitting in year one, and what was sort of Journey Brown's known for his speed, but what other attributes does he have that really intrigued you guys?
Thorpe is a grown man. He's got something that I think, you know, most coaches are looking for. It's hard to find. He's an offensive lineman with a nastiness to him. He plays with a really nasty demeanor. He wants to finish you. He wants to be physical. And when you can find guys like that, you know, they're really valuable. And if you look really at this entire offensive line recruiting class, they all show that. But you know, when he was able to do that in one of the better more competitive high school conferences in the country, the WPIL, and specifically with Coach Totten over there at Central Catholic, and then able to go to an all-star game and jump out again. You know, he's got really long arms. He's over 300 pounds. His dad played here. I know you said we had to fight for him at the end. I don't know if that necessarily was the case, he did look around a little bit, but we didn't feel that from things that were communicated with us.
As Penn State head football coach James Franklin a couple of hours ago in the media room at Beaver Stadium on this day, National Letter of Intent Day. April the 22nd will be the blue-white game at Beaver Stadium, and of course lots of Penn State football talk between now and then here on the Steve Jones Show. Looking forward to tomorrow's show. We will have Penn State football legend Jimmy Cefalo joining us, as well as USA Today NFL writer Neil Coulong. And of course, you miss any of our shows live, you can go to our podcast page at stevejonesshow.com. Steve will be back in the Sunbury Motor Studio tomorrow afternoon. Coming up here on WKOK, we'll have CBS News Top of the Hour, and then the Late Day News Roundup with Alex Reichenbach at 5:06 on WKOK.